The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, gamble wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Wednesday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my well-dressed, dapper colleague and co-host, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, how the first pick in next year's NFL draft may not just be a matter of luck. We're going to talk about some tobacco that's actually good for your financial health. And really, would someone just get Cliff Harris a bicycle already? It's Eugene, Oregon. Where have you got to go?
He wants to ride his bicycle. Oh, that's the worst Freddie Mercury that I can do, Dave. But it does get us into First Take. Tuesday night, what'd you see that you want to share with our listeners?
Got to be the worst Freddie Mercury anybody can do. Weak attempt.
Thank you.
I'll tell you what was interesting about Tuesday, because something didn't happen that we thought would. And we're going to touch upon this a couple of times over the course of today's show. Tony Sperano wasn't fired yesterday. Now, so many times we talk about coaches fired in midseason when we think it shouldn't have happened. Here's one that should. The team is going absolutely nowhere. But now here's what comes to mind yesterday. The Dolphins would like to get Andrew Luck. They'd like to have the worst record in the NFL. It's the best thing the franchise could do. Is keeping Sperano around the easiest path to do that? Lame duck coach isn't going to game plan that hard because he knows he's out. Players aren't going to play that hard for him. If they fired him and put Carl Durrell or someone else in charge, they might actually coach and try to win or do something for their future resume. They could be a bit savvy by keeping Sperano around. Okay, Teddy, Monday there was some great action that you didn't stay up for. Last night we had an intense ending for the play of the day. Were you awake past 7 o'clock?
Yeah, I stayed awake last night, Dave. It wasn't a sleepy time. It wasn't a sleepy night at all. Monday night, ran out of gas. It happens. Last night, stayed up. Obviously, it was like 8 o'clock or 8:30, and watched the ending of that Troy State-Florida international game. Ended up being a ticket cashed for myself and my clients. And, of course, if you watched the show yesterday, the play of the day on Troy came through. But the overtime period, Dave, set up a real interesting scenario, and not one that we find every day. In fact, it's a scenario, might be the only time that I can think of, that you're rooting against the team you're supporting when it comes to the coin toss. And, of course, that's the overtime coin toss. It's the only time. Is there another time that you can think of, Dave, that you're really rooting against your team to win the coin toss?
Yeah, for people who don't quite understand where we're going with this, you want to have the ball first in that overtime. That way you've only got one Jeopardy point. When you're taking 6.5, you've only got one Jeopardy point in the first three overtimes. That's the second overtime where the opponent gets the ball first and can score a 7. Yeah. So if you get the ball first, your 6.5 is guaranteed through the first overtime, slight risk in the second, guaranteed in the third because they wouldn't kick the extra point. So we actually had more jeopardy than we would have liked.
Yeah, no doubt. And but with last night, Troy lost the coin toss, which is exactly what you want. They get the ball first, doesn't matter what they do. They cannot score, they can kick a field goal, they can kick a touchdown. The goal is, to avoid that 7 and/or 8 point loss with a dog in OT. And that's the only time I could think of where you're actually rooting against your team to win the coin toss. Now, it's time to go to Market Watch. And yesterday we focused on the Heisman Trophy race and how Andrew Luck is a clear favorite. But there's also another race that we see referred often in the media. I'm going to call it the Suck for Luck race, the race at the bottom of the NFL standings for that number one overall draft choice. Yeah, Suck for Luck. Everybody's looking for a franchise QB that can be the savior. And obviously, Andrew Luck at Stanford has that wide name recognition like a Cam Newton who can immediately sell tickets and reinvigorate a franchise. So this is going to matter down the stretch, not just for when we talk about truly bad teams looking to get in the number one position for that number one overall draft pick, but also the books and the bettors are going to be looking to fade the very worst teams in the NFL as they try this suck-for-luck sweepstakes.
Yeah, when you talk to the scouts, talk to the coaches, look at even what some of the former players have said. John Lynch, a great all-pro safety at Tampa Bay, said that Luck is a once-in-a-generation quarterback. He is perceived that way, not only because of the overall talent, but the ability to step right in. And we were just going through some NFL rosters this morning and thinking, you know, if he came out next week, he probably starts for at least half of the NFL his first day of training camp. But now here's where it gets interesting. Luck actually has a degree of control here. Remember back a couple of years ago when Eli Manning didn't want to be a San Diego Charger? We're not sure why. We love San Diego. Just so many nice areas down there. You play in good weather as well. He ended up being a New York Giant. He sort of controlled that through his father, Archie. Now look at this Luck situation. His father, Oliver Luck, you know, was a great quarterback at West Virginia. He's now the athletic director there. Knows his way around the minefields of professional sports. Luck does not have to go into the NFL draft next spring. He can return to Stanford. He's got a year of eligibility left. So they've already let it be known a little bit. And you see the rumor circulating. There are some places he might not want to go to. It may not be the location of the franchise, but the idea that, you know what, I don't want to go to a 1-15 or an 0-16 team where I'm going to take a physical beating and have a couple of losing seasons. So we may see a little bit of intrigue in here. It could be Luck wanting to go to a little better team, or Teddy, something we'll get to even more on the show, if let's say it's Miami and they have to hire a new coach, or if it's Indianapolis and they have to hire a new coach. Could Luck be controlling who that coach is going to be?
It's quite possible. I mean, when you talk about a guy who is going to be able to dictate his terms, dictate quite possibly where he wants to play, dictate when he comes out, almost reminds me of a similar situation with the last great Stanford quarterback, a young man by the name of John Elway, who chose to sit out for a season instead of playing for the Indianapolis Colts, forced his way into Denver, and obviously the rest is history for John Elway. It turned out pretty well for him once he got to the Broncos. When we look at these bottom teams in the NFL standings, you look at Indy, they've got a pretty good quarterback coming back, some guy by the name of Manning. Jacksonville, they've got their QB of the future in Blaine Gabbert. Minnesota's got their QB of the future in Christian Ponder. The St. Louis Rams are at the bottom of the standings. They've got their QB of the future in Sam Bradford. It really doesn't look like there's a lot of teams at the very bottom of the standings that are like Miami in looking to suck for luck as much as they can.
Actually, I thought there was an ideal one. You know, the Oakland Raiders have pretty good talent in a lot of places. Get some draft picks to work with. Make a package deal to trade with Miami or someone. But no, you did that already. You got Carson Palmer. Every bit of him. No picks in the first four rounds next year. Nice move, guys.
Yeah. Enjoy, Oakland. All right. Hey, we're looking for your feedback. We value those questions. Great questions coming in the email and in the forums again today. Keep those emails coming. We answer them every day on air. Sportsday@covers.com. I'm looking for a good rant. We're supposed to play the best rant on air every Wednesday. The only rant we've gotten so far that was close was talking about my mom, and I'm not playing that on the air. Toll free 866-966-4599. And, of course, get involved in the Covers.com community. Active threads and discussions going right now, Covers.com/posting forum. When we come back, it's time for the postmortem.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Let me know when I'm live. Hi, everybody. This is Bridget Magnus of Getting Real Estate in Vegas, and you are watching the Vegas Video Network.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. Let's get those surgical gowns on. Time for the postmortem, where we take you to the operating room to dissect the results, to show you things you should have seen, but probably didn't.
Things certainly haven't gone well for Houston Nutt during his tenure, or at least during his recent tenure, at Ole Miss. Their current 10-game SEC losing streak is the school's longest in their 70 years of conference play. And in four conference games this season, the Rebels have been outscored by 87 points and outgained by 987 yards. That's just four conference games for Ole Miss thus far. The one thing that Houston Nutt has going in his favor when it comes to job security is a massive $5 million buyout clause. Good agent for Houston Nutt when it comes to job security. So when we put the scalpels to Ole Miss and the matchup this week, there is something from the past that could make it even worse for Houston Nutt in this particular game.
This week, Houston has a problem. We saw a little bit of it last year, and it was kind of fun. So let's backtrack and set it all up. Back in 2006, Gus Malzahn and the Springdale High School team in Arkansas had one of the best seasons you would ever see. Loaded with talent, playing into Malzahn's playbook, he's actually written a book about that spread offense and those tactics, created an interesting scenario. Houston Nutt said, you know what, they've got some great talent there. Let's make a package deal. We'll bring the coach in. Gus, you'll be my offensive coordinator. You bring four of your players along. Looked like a dream scenario in Arkansas. People particularly loved it because these were all homegrown kids. Miserable failure, ultimately. It looked like Nutt was actually bringing Malzahn in just to get those four players, only one of which, as things turned out, stayed at Arkansas. The others left when Malzahn did just a year later. Malzahn was actually backed into a corner. They didn't want to use his playbook. He was giving a lesser and lesser role as time went by. We actually got a quote that we found very interesting, and this is from the Fort Smith Times-Record. Scott Fowden, the sports editor, a column all the way back to January of 2007 when the proverbial was hitting the fan. Said, behind his back, there was already scheming and plotting to demote him before the Razorbacks even went through spring drills. He kept his mouth shut when the Murray State Mafia, and that was the reference to Houston Nutt's assistants who were with him at Murray State, kept belittling him by calling him high school in front of the players. Flamed out very badly. Well, now who's the offensive coordinator at Auburn? Gus Malzahn. Who helped to put that national championship together with Cam Newton last year? Gus Malzahn. And who decided with 4 minutes to play, leading by 20 at Ole Miss, to have Cam Newton throw a touchdown pass? Gus Malzahn. That was only a small pound of flesh. I think he wants even more this week. Don't be surprised if Auburn not only rings up a score on Ole Miss, but keeps ringing it up in the second half. There's some bad blood there that hasn't settled just yet. Buffalo Bills made a good move, financially, to play some of their games in Toronto. Take a look at the financials. According to Forbes magazine, they're getting $12 million per game for five regular season games being played here, as opposed to $4 million per game when they're playing on their own field. You would jump at that, especially when you're in a small market like Buffalo and you could use that money. But something seems to be amiss here. When we look at the photo in the background of the game between Buffalo and Chicago, played here in the Rogers Center last year, something is wrong with this picture. Teddy, what's wrong with this?
I'll tell you exactly what's wrong with the picture, Dave. Those were Bear fans in the picture, in the game at Toronto last year. The year before, there were a ton of Jets fans in Toronto. This year, there's going to be a ton of Redskins fans in Toronto. And instead of this being something like a home game for Buffalo, it's really not. It's the moral equivalent of a neutral site game. Crowd support mixed. Buffalo's got to travel too. Not a true home game. If you're giving the Bills 3 or 3.5 points for their supposed home field advantage in this game, you may be giving them a little bit too much. Buffalo 0-3 on this field in the regular season. In 2008, they lost to Miami 16-3. The Bills were favored in that ballgame. 2 years ago, they lost to the Jets 19-13, plus 3.5. Didn't cash a ticket. Last year, Buffalo plus 3 against Chicago. Game ended up with a push, but the Bears came away with that straight-up win. So that's 0-3 straight-up, 0-2-1 against the spread. And we look at the attendance numbers for those games, 52,000, 51,000, 50,000 over the 3 years. Now look at what the Bills have actually drawn in Buffalo this year. 69,803, 68,174, 68,191. Bills are selling more seats to their own fans at home. The Rogers Center in Toronto not giving the Bills a true home field edge.
When we come back, there is no such thing as a hedge fund in sports. And when we go inside the numbers, today it's smoke 'em if you got 'em. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Hey, I'm Al Mann. Is that how you get them to do that all the time? Just sit there and be an ass. Is that it? Hey, I'm Al. Hey, I'm Al Mancini at Top of the Food Chain. You are watching the Vegas Video Network. We got big forks, big spoons. I got a big mouth. I got no guests.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Before we go inside the numbers, time to answer those viewer emails and questions that are being posted in the forum. And I'm going to start with a question from the forum from last week that we didn't get a chance to answer. This is coming from BigBill365. He wants to know why we can't have a girl in a bikini reading the sports topics instead of us. And Dave, the bottom line is, I'd love to have a girl in a bikini sitting next to me as opposed to you, but the bottom line is, we don't see a lot of girls in bikinis that seem to know a lot about sports. Do you know any female sports bettors? Do they exist out there?
Okay, here's what you can do, guys. Put our audio on right on the cover site. Search around, you will find Babe of the Day. And by the way, today, Hanina Love, yeah, if she was sitting next to me, Teddy would not be doing this show. This camera would have gone dark a long time ago. So yeah, there's a little bit of that. We're not the greatest to look at, but you can listen to us and you can look at her while we do the next segment.
Let's get with the letter, Brian from Boston. There's another letter also from Mike. And Mike. We'll answer that question tomorrow. It came in a little bit too late to answer today, but it's on the same basic topic here. The letter from Brian says, good afternoon, gentlemen. How do you determine if a middle and or hedge attempt is plus EV, expected value plus EV? For instance, I had a two-team six-point tease on the Jets last Monday night, winner, and the Ravens minus 1.5 last night, loser. I was able to get the Jags at plus 10.5 before kickoff to minimize my losses, save the juice. My question is that even though this one worked out for me as a hedge, is there any kind of formula to determine if middles slash hedges are plus EV wagers? Please advise.
We're going to get this question a lot over the course of time. We'd like to just answer it once and have that be it forever. So we'll address this carefully and succinctly. And by the way, each guy's allowed to ask this one time. We know there'll be new viewers coming in. They're going to ask again. If any of you come in and ask this question again, you're going to have to deal with Jacob, the guy behind the camera. And you don't want any part of that. Trust me. Okay, guys, very succinctly, now write this down. In sports betting, there is no such thing as a hedge. None. You want every bet that you make to be a bet that has the expectation of winning. So time and time again, someone will say, we laid 2 on this game earlier in the week. Now it's up to 5. Look at the hedge we could do. The hedge only works if the plus 5 is a positive bet. If all you're doing is taking a weak position, you're just weakening your minus 2. If you think the plus 5 works in and of itself, then you do it. The base where we start has to do with coin tosses. And so many people will answer this wrong until they really think about it. Some say, okay, coin has come up heads 7 times in a row. What are the odds of it coming up heads on the 8th flip? And so many people will say, well, the odds of 8 straight are just incredible. It has nothing to do with 8 straight, because that 8th flip is entirely independent of those first 7. They never happened to that coin. It's the same thing in sports. So from a sports standpoint, every bet is its own separate entity. That's going to matter to you when we get to money time later and our play of the day. It's a separate entity. But there is a lifestyle edge, non-sports related. if you've got bills you have to pay this week, and there's a hedge opportunity, and you have to have the money, there is a lifestyle hedge that's available. But Teddy, there's just not a sports hedge. Because so many times people just water down good bets by making a bad one.
Well, there are situations where you can hedge and hedge profitably, and generally that's going to come at halftime of these ball games. One of the things that I like to advise my clients to do, don't turn a win into a push just with an automatic play on the other side at halftime when your team's leading by margin. But there are many halftime situations where you're going to see one team got the breaks in the first half, you expect the other team to start coming back. That happens on a consistent basis. And when you're getting a nice middle opportunity where you can cash both sides of both sides. If you have a play on the Ravens for the game and you want to hedge with the Jags at the half, and you can do that, that's actually a really bad example because it wouldn't have worked. But if in a situation like that, where you have one team for the game, they're in a great position at halftime, you have another team or the other team that you can get a position where you're going to be able to cash both your original bet and the second bet with room to spare, that's one time where you may want to look at a hedging situation. But people ask me about hedging parlays all the time. Oh, I have a six-teamer. It all comes down to the last game. Should I hedge that last game? Well, if you wanted to hedge the last game, maybe you should have bet a five-teamer to begin with.
We also had a question about middles, coming up in that email, and there's a reason why we don't talk about them. You're going to find one about every 6 months in today's marketplace. Middles are ideal when they existed. The idea that in a basketball game, you could lay one and take three. In a football game, lay four, take six and a half. They just don't exist in the marketplace. Now, you can middle over the course of the week. If you lay four, you might see the plus six and a half later. But at a given moment, you're just not going to see a middle available in front of you at that point in time. Well, it's a subject that just won't come up very much. The markets iron them out far too quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing if you're going to get down very, very early on some of these games and be able to take advantage. You'll see some middle opportunities when it comes to totals, particularly when totals go across key numbers, and particularly in the college basketball total marketplace, where it's not unusual, but early in the season, to see 10, 12, even 14-point moves on some of those totals when a group gets involved or one of the syndicates gets involved. You'll see enormous line moves with those totals. But for sides, doesn't happen very often. And there's a concept I want to bring up here that I should have brought up a moment ago when it came to the halftime wagers called the adjusted game line concept. And basically, when you're looking at those halftime wagers, you have, give me an example. The Saints are up 31-0 over Indy. What was the halftime? I'm trying to remember what the halftime line in that game was, David. Do you remember offhand?
Wasn't watching by that
Let's
point.
Just say it was Saints minus three. So then the adjusted game line, if you want New Orleans second half, is New Orleans minus 34 because they have to win the game by more than 34 points for you to cash that second half wager. So when I'm making halftime bets, I'm always trying to adjust the number to the adjusted game line number. Put the halftime point spread into the current score, and it spits out what the adjusted game line is going to be and what you're really laying with that second half wager. Well, now, it's got to be time to go inside the numbers. What do we got today, Dave?
We're always looking for edges that just don't show up in the point spread. Sometimes it's home field advantages that don't really exist. And today we're going to take a trip on Tobacco Road in North Carolina. If you watch any of these four North Carolina teams at home, you see the crowds are kind of sparse. Got a note from a good friend yesterday who goes to a lot of the Carolina games that so many of the fans show up dressed as aluminum. His way of referring to the fact that you see a lot of empty seats there. And it's a wine and cheese crowd. It's not beer and brats. People who go to games at Wake Forest or Duke or North Carolina, they clap. They don't yell. They don't scream. So as such, when these schools play each other, and this is what we call the Tobacco Road Group, it's North Carolina, North Carolina State, Duke, and Wake Forest, there's very little home field advantage. When you're the visiting team, you just get up in the morning, get on the bus, and go over to the stadium. It's not a long trip. You're not flying. You're not in a hotel the night before. It also means that your fans have easy access to tickets. It's a short drive for a lot of them. Tickets are easy to come by. So when we go inside the numbers, it's not surprising to see that the home field advantage is very minimal. If you just take every road underdog, when those four teams go head-to-head since 1998, you would have gone 25-11 against the point spread. That's nice over a big sample. And what it tells you is in these games, they're still giving the teams a home field advantage in the line that doesn't exist in reality.
Coming up, the news you need to know in our Insider Six-Pack.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
And now it's time for our Insider Six-Pack, six tidbits of knowledge that'll help you with this week's games. We're going to start in Oregon, where the rocky ride for talented but immature cornerback...
You're not going to sing again, are you?
No, I'm not.
Okay,
you know, we've done the bicycle gig already. And Lord knows, if they're listening to me sing, it's going to be a long, long show. One singing attempt per show, maximum, I promise. Rocky ride for talented but immature cornerback Cliff Harris continues. He's facing his second suspension of the season. You remember over the summer, he was suspended for the opener against LSU after being clocked going 118 miles an hour on I-5 back in June. This Monday, cited for suspended license, no insurance, and for good measure, he wasn't wearing a seatbelt.
You should wear a seatbelt at 118.
One would think. One would hope that maybe he should be riding a bicycle around you, Dave. I think that was your point. But despite being a preseason All-American, note that the absence of Harris would not be a major one. He struggled to work his way back into the starting rotation for Oregon, and although his playing time has increased week by week, he's still not a starter for the team, and he cost his team a shutout last week. It was Cliff Harris who returned the punt and then went backwards into the end zone, tackled for a safety in that easy that allowed the Buffaloes to get their only 2 points of the game, and he also drew a taunting penalty even before kickoff. So not sure how quickly the Ducks are going to be welcoming Chris Harris back to the team after this latest suspension issue.
Oregon won't miss Cliff Harris much. South Carolina will miss Marcus Lattimore an awful lot. Lattimore, one of the best running backs in the country, key part of their offense, now gone for the full season, getting a little worried about what they're going to do to try to patch in. It's going to be Brandon Wilds, a freshman, getting the start, only 8 carries, for 67 yards. That's a lot of pressure because remember, Connor Shaw is only going to be making his second SEC start at quarterback for South Carolina. Rare matchup here where the two quarterbacks in this game have combined for one career conference start. That makes it a little bit dicey from a game planning standpoint. So how does Steve Spurrier smooth this out a little bit? Here's what we expect to see. Bruce Ellington taking a lot of snaps out of the Wildcat formation. Something they showed a little bit of last year. They've shown it more in practice this week. Look for Ellington to do that as a way for Spurrier not only to confuse the defense, but to take pressure off of his young players at the other spots in the skill positions.
It's, 11:30 a.m. here in Las Vegas. And
nice watch.
Thank you. I brought it in just for that little spot.
Nice watch.
But yes, 11:30 a.m.
Tag Hauer?
Not yet. Getting there. You know, as soon as we get him as a sponsor, I'll be happy to wear their product on the air.
I like that.
Bottom line, 11:30 Pacific time on a Wednesday. And, Tony Sperano still has his job as the Miami Dolphins head coach. But, boy, that candidate list is really getting out there. Bill Cowher being reported in the news. John Gruden might have signed an extension with Monday Night Football. He's got an out in that extension. His name still being bandied about as a potential Dolphins replacement head coach. And all of this could tie back into our opening topic about Andrew Luck and the Suck for Luck sweepstakes. If the Dolphins end up with the league's worst record, something they're certainly capable of, could the coaching carousel play a direct role in Luck's decision as to whether to come out or not? But right now, the Miami Dolphins QB situation is an absolute mess. Matt Moore, unable to practice with a rib injury suffered last Sunday. J.P. Losman was brought in yesterday, signed and brought on board because Sage Rosenfeld suffering from a blood disorder. Losman hasn't played at an NFL level in a couple of years. And this team is in a really ugly situation if Matt Moore can't go this weekend, and that remains a possibility. So You don't want a quarterback that you signed on Monday, a guy who hasn't played in the NFL in a couple of years, starting against the New York Giants just 6 days later.
Actually, I like that reference that Losman hasn't played at an NFL level in a couple of years, because he was on a roster, he just wasn't playing at an NFL level. Talk about quarterbacks a little bit. We're always searching for things that aren't factored into the line. And we've got a little subtlety for Minnesota, Carolina that you might want to take a look at. One of the things we focus on a lot in college football is how certain offenses are difficult for defenses to diagnose when they don't see them very often. Part of that is it also means you don't have the personnel to emulate that offense in practice. So what's one of the first things we've heard from defensive coordinators this year? How difficult it is to prepare for Cam Newton. Because of the physical skills he has, you just don't have someone on the scout team that can emulate that. Well, take a look at Minnesota. Joe Webb is not a Cam Newton in terms of overall ability, but in terms of size, look at that athleticism, the ability to run, and arm strength. He might be as close as just about anyone on any NFL roster for emulating Newton in practice. Could it be this week that the Viking defense gets a little extra edge on the practice field that other teams have not had?
Yesterday we talked about Tom Brady's brilliant career numbers against Dick LeBeau's Pittsburgh Steelers defense and how the Steelers defense has a really hard time adjusting tactically to the way the Patriots spread the football around the field. There may be another element in play this week that makes it even more difficult for Pittsburgh to get stops. Now, we could, Casey Kampton, who's missed the last three games, is going to try to practice today. Don't know if he's going to be good enough to go this weekend. He's still very much a question mark. But even if Hampton plays, Pittsburgh's still going to be without Aaron Smith, who's been declared out for the season. They're not going to have James Harrison this week. They're not going to have Chris Hoke this week. How bad is that Steelers' lack of depth up front? Well, try this quote from Arizona Cardinals quarterback Kevin Cobb. Quote, "They were tired and they were trying to sub, and that's when our running game got going." Of course, this is an Arizona Cardinals running game that hasn't got going against anyone for the majority of the season, and also was without Beanie Wells. They were able to run the football successfully against the Steelers last Sunday. New England could have similar success this time around.
Still no line yet on Denver and Detroit for this week because of Matthew Stafford's status. Could they be opening up a door for us, perhaps? Think about this. You know, Stafford has a great reputation, good enough to keep this game off the board. But when he was out last year, how did the Lions do with Sean Hill? How about 5-5 straight up, 7-3 against the spread, one of the straight up losses being that near miss at Green Bay when they actually outplayed the Packers, lost by two, another loss at Buffalo also by just 2 points. They didn't skip a beat. In fact, Sean Hill averaged almost one full yard more per pass attempt than Matthew Stafford did. Could we actually make a case that because Hill actually knows this offense better, not the athlete Stafford is, but he calls a better game, that with the injuries in Detroit's running game and the inability to establish that part, Hill might be a better option for the quick reads and the short throws that you need to make this game flow as they're currently situated? Detroit is number 31 in the NFL in percentage of runs on second down, number 32 dead last on percentage of runs on third down. If you need to be throwing the ball on first down, make those short passes, get better down and distance, could Hill be every bit as good as Stafford and maybe even better this week? We're going to watch this one very closely.
When we come back, we're going to put all of this news to work for you. It's money time.
This is David Ivey from Pub Crawl. It's funny because this is David from... You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Okay, guys, it's money time! Let's go to Pittsburgh, where the Pitt Panthers are about 10-point favorites tonight, over under 41.5 against UConn. And this is a Pitt team, well, their offense has barely scored 10 points in their last couple of games. In fact, the Panthers held to 2 offensive touchdowns in their last 9 quarters. The last game, they got a kick return score and a defensive score or a block, was it a defensive score and a block punt? It was two non-offensive scores for the Panthers last time around. There were only two touchdowns. In fact, their only points of the game when the offensive line simply got manhandled.
It's a case of having to put square pegs into round holes. It just doesn't work very well, does it? There was a big paradigm shift. When you go from Dave Wannstedt and the type of football he coached to now Todd Graham and the kind of football he coaches, Graham wants to do things entirely differently from the way Wannstedt did. And part of the problem in college football is it's not just X's and O's, but it's the kids who fit into those X's and O's. It means that you're taking a group of players who were recruited to play an entirely different style. Some controversy back in September when Graham made a couple of comments about quarterback Tino Sunseri that were taken the wrong way, he later had to apologize for them. Well, what do we have from Graham? Try this again for this week, because this may not sit very well either. He said, I feel like offensively maybe we tried to do too much. I've always talked about going from A to Z. You don't want to do that. We tried to go to A to M, but probably should have gone A to G. How can that not come across as being insulting to your players? But again, it's not a fit. Sinceri is not a fit for Graham's offense. So what do? You need to build around the players you have first, get your own recruits in play, and here's what you don't do. When you're home against Utah, a team you can physically control, and you're going to have 61 offensive snaps in the game, they gave the ball to Ray Graham 12 times. He's the best player on the team. He should be the focal point of that offense. And when they won earlier this year, think about that South Florida game on a Thursday night. It was Ray Graham carrying the load. Is this a case of a coach perhaps out-coaching himself?
Well, the issue here might well be the offensive line and really what happened in the line of scrimmage. If you watched their last game against Utah, physically manhandled. Tino Sunseri for the year, 7 interceptions, only 5 touchdown passes. He didn't have any time to drop back against the Utes. Literally, every time he was 5 steps back, the Utah defenders were in that backfield. Similar story for Ray Graham. He just had absolutely no room to run in that ballgame. We're talking about a bunch of linemen who were recruited to play smash-mouth football. They're now being asked to look athletic and try to make plays. So far, it hasn't happened at all for Pitt, but it's kind of a similar story when we talk about the UConn side of the equation. The Huskies have not been pretty on the offensive side of the football so far this season. Quarterback Johnny McAtee, he's a freshman. He's been sacked 12 times in the last 2 games alone, and the Huskies have given up 24 sacks this season. Last year, for the entire year, they only allowed 15.
What's the problem with a freshman quarterback and a struggling offensive line? Confidence and cohesion. As we were reading a lot of quotes on today's show, in this modern world where you've got Facebook, Twitter, easy access everywhere, you can get inside the heads of the players so much easier than it used to be. Something from McEntee earlier this week that's really enlightening about just how fragile that Connecticut offense is. That's after their loss to game against South Florida. Said USF did some things I don't think we were ready for. They had some packages we didn't expect. We need to be prepared to pick up the blitzes this week against Pitt, wherever they come from. That's what happens when you've got a freshman out there with a weak offensive line in front of him. Big reason why we're not getting heavily involved tonight, this is another classic game where you could have mistakes decided. Much more likely, this point spread is determined by someone doing something wrong than someone doing something right.
Yeah, I'm the same way, Dave. I am not in action on tonight's game. If I was in action, I could not possibly lay double digits with the Pitt Panthers here. It'd be a UConn or nothing type of wager for me. I chose to make nothing. Let's go to St. Louis tonight. The Cardinals, -115, over under 7.5. It's a rematch of game 2. Jaime Garcia against Colby Lewis. And, well, the first take on this game, we got to talk about the weather forecast. We pop that up in the graphics, please, because we have a real chance of rain in St. Louis tonight. Major chance of rain. Not sure that we're going to see a full game played. Not sure that we're going to see the game go off on time, but it's certainly possible. First pitch temperature around 50 degrees. This is not midsummer Texas weather, Dave. Not even close.
So let's talk about what that means. On the show last week, we noted Jaime Garcia's big home and away disparity. And if you missed that, it's part of an Inside the Numbers segment. 2.37 in his career at home on this mound, 4.28 on the road, almost 2 full runs. It's one of the biggest gaps in Major League Baseball. How did he fare against Texas last week? He was dynamite. 7 innings, no runs, 3 hits, only 1 walk, 7 strikeouts, a 12.4 pitches per inning. He was terrific. But now here's where it gets interesting. This rain is supposed to be throughout the evening. Could be intermittent. We might see delays at some part in the proceedings. And we could talk about now the umbrella factor in handicapping Major League Baseball. It will not come up a lot each season. Be prepared when it does. This line is based upon Garcia's home stats. They're not thinking rain when they post this line a couple of days ago. But if there's going to be rain, if there's a chance that you might get those starters out of the game early, boy, there's a whole difference when it goes to the bullpens, isn't there?
Yeah, there sure is. And, you know, the St. Louis bullpen has blown 2 games in this series. Obviously, there are issues with communication between Tony La Russa and his bullpen coach. That may be putting it a little bit mildly. The Rangers' bullpen has been stellar. It's been stellar when there was stellar in the regular season, has been stellar throughout the course of their playoff run, and has been really, with the exception of the one struggles in the blowout loss in game number 3, the Rangers' bullpen has been the better of these two pens throughout this World Series. So if we're in a situation tonight where both starters get pulled relatively early, I think Texas is going to have a legitimate edge in that bullpen, both from a confidence standpoint and from an execution standpoint when it comes to what the Cards have been doing bullpen-wise over the last few ballgames.
Okay, so now let's get our drum roll set for today because it's going to touch upon a couple of topics that we brought up earlier. Yes, we have a series play on St. Louis that we did on the show last week, taking $1.40. That's locked in the pocket, that's gone, that's out of play. Tonight there's an opportunity we see at this particular price point that might seem like it's going against that, but it's not. This is an independent setting. So Teddy, can you do a drum roll? Please know Freddie Mercury and take this one home for us.
Today's play of the day.
You play the drums like you sing.
Yes, I do.
Wow.
What do you want? Do you want me to start smacking? I mean, what am I supposed to be doing here? You know, it's a drum roll. Tight. You know what I mean? Play of the day. Let's get the graphic up there, guys. Play of the day is going to be the Texas Rangers plus 105. That's right. We're looking for Texas to end the World Series tonight. We're going to take a shot with a plus price play on the Texas Rangers. And that's going to wrap it up for the Wednesday edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck.